What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Be More Rad's Gaming Gourmet. And I'm Brad, a.k.a. Be More Rad, and we got some topics to cover for you today. So we got gaming in the news, we got recent and upcoming titles this September, and Hot or Not games out now. So today, I do apologize because my voice is super stuffy. Now, it was way worse earlier this week, and that's why I haven't put out a podcast in a few weeks, because my voice has been just kind of all over the place. It's been real cracking. It's been cracking like a 13-year-old kid. So that's why I decided not to do that. So I do apologize for my voice being the way it is now, but hopefully we can get through it without many problems. So our first topic, the one that we're going to cover first, is gaming in the news. Now, when I was looking up different things, gaming in the news, the Unity death threat came up first. So I thought, okay, well, let me check this out. So I checked it out, and it's pretty interesting. So it says, I found this information on BNN Bloomberg. This was by Jason Schreier, I don't know. I probably chopped his name up a little bit. Anyway, so it's Bloomberg News, and it says, video game company Unity closes offices following death threat. Okay, so I was like, okay, so a death threat for a gaming company. All right, so I read into it, and this is what it says. It says, Unity Technologies Incorporated canceled a planned town hall and closed two offices Thursday after receiving what it said was a credible death threat in the wake of a controversial pricing decision earlier this week. So there's more to the story. There's some kind of pricing controversial. But it says the company was made aware of a potential threat to some of our offices and has taken immediate proactive measures to ensure the safety of our employees, a spokesperson said in a statement. Unity is closing offices that could be potential targets on Thursday and Friday and is fully cooperating with law enforcement. Unity, the maker of tools and technology for video games, set off a firestorm on September 12th by announcing it will begin charging developers a new fee for games made using its software, called the Unity Engine. Beginning January 1st, makers of Unity games will have to pay per user installation after a certain threshold is reached. Wow. So after the threshold is reached, they'll have to pay a fee. It says some video game makers accuse Unity of violating its own terms of services and limited that new charges could threaten their livelihoods. Many game studios put out harshly worded statements urging the technology company to reconsider. So it sounds like they're not happy, the developers. Then it says Unity Chief Executive Officer John was set to talk to staff Thursday morning, but instead said the meeting would be canceled as a precaution. Offices in Austin, Texas, and San Francisco, California were closed. Wow. So death threats after this this announcement by them that they're going to charge a new fee after they reach a certain threshold of downloads. So that's pretty interesting. We're going to get into that just a little bit more. We're going to see the developer side of that. But so Unity Games, they make an engine called Unity Engine. The Unity Engine. And if you've ever played some of these indie games, and you may have seen Unity Engine pop up on the screen, you know, before the game actually starts. So let's just look at real quick before we just get too far into it. It's some of the games that Unity Engine has helped produce, the engine that they've used. So Cuphead, Beat Saber, City Skylines, Pokemon Go, Hollow Knight, Monument Valley, Ori and the Blind Forest, Rust is a big one. I played Rust. Love that game. Subnautica, Among Us. I'm pretty sure everybody's probably played Among Us. Return of the Obra Dinn, Gunfire Reborn, My Friend Pedro, Far Lone Cells, Pillars of Eternity, which is a great game. Rimworld, Death's Door, Blitzkrieg, Fall Guys, Ultimate Knockout, Earthstone, Untitled Goose Game, Ape Out, A Valley Without Weird, Escape Plan, Crossy Road, Outer Wilds, Battletech, Cluster Truck. I mean, I'm not naming all of them, but A Cult of the Lamb is a new one, just came out last year. Chaos Reborn, Broforce, 7 Days to Die, that's a big one. Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Angry Birds 2, Black Ground, Cities of Motion, Bad Piggies, Arma Tactics, Arma Krog, Genshin Impact. I mean, there's a lot of games here that Unity's help, you know, their engine has been used to develop the game. So let's look at the developer side of this thing. So it says here in this article, this is found on TheVerge.com. This is by Ash Parrish. It says, developers respond to Unity's new pricing scheme. We have never made a public statement before. That is how badly you effed up. So, wow. So he took a little excerpt from his article there. So here it goes. It says, earlier this week, Unity, the company that makes the Unity video game engine popular with indie developers, announced that it was changing its pricing model. The changes included a pricing scheme that sought to charge developers on a per-install basis for games that met specific download and revenue thresholds. Unity wanted to charge developers for game installs without seemingly talking or taking into account the many reasons a game might be installed without being purchased. So Unity's new model could theoretically result in situations where developers would be on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars in fees without the revenue to pay for it. So it says, once the news broke, the video game developer community reacted strongly and negatively to the news, citing Unity's poor communication, lack of clarity, loss of trust, and what they saw as a naked attempt to squeeze money out of a small developer's teams. It says many developers and even publishers took to social media to register their anger and call on Unity to reverse its decision. So yeah, they're really mad. Developers, they're like, you just kind of pretty much gave us a sneak attack. We didn't see this coming. Like, what's going on? So they felt very betrayed probably by the engine that they're using, the company behind the engine. So here's a... Yeah, I guess this is a tweet, maybe, by one of the developers. Hey, gamers. Today, Unity, the engine we use to make our games, announced that they'll soon be taking a fee from developers for every copy of the game installed over a certain threshold, regardless of how that copy was obtained. Guess who has a somewhat highly anticipated game coming to Xbox Game Pass in 2024? That's right, it's us and a lot of other developers. That means another Crab's Treasure will be free to install for the 25 million Game Pass subscribers. If a fraction of those users download our game, Unity could take a fee that puts an enormous dent in our income and threatens the sustainability of our business. And that's before we even think about sales on other platforms, or pirated installs of our game, or even the multiple installs by the same user. This decision puts us and countless others studios in a position where we might not be able to justify using Unity for our future titles. If these changes aren't rolled back, we'll be heavily considering abandoning our wealth of Unity expertise we've accumulated over the years and starting from scratch in a new engine, which is really something we'd rather not do. On behalf of the dev community, we're calling on Unity to reverse the latest in a string of short-sighted decisions that seem to prioritize shareholders over their products and actual customers or users. I effing hate it here. Aggro crap. Wow. So, they're really upset. So they don't want to, I mean, they're obviously they don't want to abandon using the Unity engine because, like it said there, again, it says, where did I see that? It talks about their expertise. They don't want to abandon their wealth of Unity expertise they've accumulated over the years because they have used this engine and used this engine. And so they know the ins and out of what they can do, what they can't do. And to just have to go start fresh on a new engine would be very, very unproductive for them. So right now they're just in a good spot with the engine because they know what the ins and outs of it. So they really don't want to abandon ship, but they said they would. You know, if it puts them in a situation where they're going to lose money, then you know they might do it. The thing about this is, But they were blindsided by it. So here we go for another developer. It says, this is Cult of the Lamb. They sent out a tweet. It says, buy Cult of the Lamb now because we're deleting it on January 1st. Wow. So, I mean, you got developers that are just telling you, hey, we're going to delete it on January 1st. Like, after that, we're not even going to have it up. Just buy it now. Because, I mean, some of them is not even taking the chance of having to pay a bunch of fees because they don't want to have to lose money. So it says, though the post was a tongue-in-cheek joke, it's one that's being repeated by other developers. Buy our game, but don't install it after January 1st, 2024. So it says, other game makers wondered how Unity could put forth such a statement without considering all the ways it could negatively impact its users. According to a post on the Unity forums, from someone claiming to be an employee, objections were raised internally. So this employee is pretty much saying that, hey, we've already talked about this in the company. You know, we told them that, hey, this is going to be a bad thing, and the developers are going to be mad, and some of them may abandon ship, but guess what? They did it anyways. So to me, that would make me even more angry because, hey, they already know what's going to happen. They already knew how we were going to feel, and they still did it. So it's just one of those things when you got companies that are trying to monetize everything. And I don't know, on Unity's side of it, there may be a reason why they're doing this, other than, I mean, I know a lot of people are going to say it's just a cash grab, but if their company is losing money or they're not meeting their quota, that might be a reason why they decided to do this. I don't know for sure. I don't think it's ever explained why they made that decision. So it says that since the initial announcement, Unity has updated its blog, posting the announcing fees, and answered questions on social media in an attempt to provide additional clarification. In a Twitter post, or X post, Unity made one more change, stating it would not charge for reinstalls, while reaffirming that it doesn't expect these fees to apply to the majority of its customers. So they updated their policy there. They said they're not going to charge for reinstalls. So that's one issue that's probably kind of contained. So if they keep the word on that. This is more than 90% of our customers will not be affected by this change, Unity posted. Customers who will be impacted are generally those who have found substantial scale in downloads and revenue and have reached both our install and revenue thresholds. This means a low or no fee for creators who have not found scale success yet, and a modest one-time fee for those who have. So it says developers express that even with these clarifications, it would not be enough to undo the harm Unity's announcement has caused. Even if Unity only expects 10% of its customers to pay fees, the damage has been done, the trust has been lost. I'm going to back it up just a little bit. It says a modest one-time fee for those who have. But it also said before that they're going to have to pay a per install basis for everything after a certain threshold. So how is that a one-time fee if you're having to pay every download after that? So I don't know. I'm kind of a little confused about that. So it says, let me be clear, the clause isn't a big issue, wrote Gary Newman, founder of Rust, developer Facepunch Studios. It says, if everything worked out, the tracking was flawless, and it was 10 p per sale, no big really. 10% per sale, no biggie really. If that's what it costs, then that's what it costs. But that's not why we're furious. It hurts because we didn't agree to this. We use the engine because you pay up front, and then you ship your product. We weren't told this was going to happen. We weren't warned. We weren't consulted. We have spent 10 years making Rust on Unity's engine. We've paid them every year, and now they've changed the rules. So again, they've been blindsided. Nothing was talked to them about. Nobody contacted them and gave them like a huge amount of time to really prepare for this or, you know, anything. I mean, you got some developers that are mid-game and then now they're finding out this and they don't know what to do, okay? Well, we've already spent several years developing this game on your engine and now you tell me this? Like, and of course, the company behind Unity probably wouldn't tell them that because they don't want to lose everybody to just jump ship. So they want them to be involved in a project more than likely, so they won't jump ship right away. But honestly, this just kind of shows you about how things are today. I mean, you look at the Budweiser incident, you look at all these other stuff, you know, companies make the wrong move, everybody leaves. You know, it's like, hey, you just lost your consumer base. So you really have to be careful as a company, like the decisions that you make, and kind of take in everything in consideration. But so I do like it that the developers are sticking by each other and that they're fighting for one another. I would even like to see this, some of the AAA titles kind of come to bat for them, you know. But it's good to see that the gaming community can stick together. But it says Devolver Digital, notable for being both an indie developer powerhouse and for its unorthodox communication style, posted, "Definitely include what engine you're using in game pitches. It's important information," which seems to suggest that it would look less favorably on video on future games developed in Unity for the unknown costs they could incur. Then it goes on to say this, "One of the cool things about RPG Maker is that once you buy the engine, you can sell your game as many times as you want and never owe us another dime." That was by RPG Maker. The engine for games included Yuminiki, Corpse Party, and Always Sometimes Monsters. So you got even the other engine companies are reaching out and say, "Hey, come over here, because that we will never do that to you." So now you got other engine companies that are pretty much trying to take advantage of the situation and say, "Hey, you know, come over here, come over to this side, come to the light side." But anyway, so you got definitely both people trying to take advantage of that. You got Unity trying to back up their claim, and other developers or other engines trying to get their business. So that's it for gaming in the news. That's a big story, Unity. I don't know really how that's going to go. There's a lot of those games that I mentioned earlier that I really like Rust and some other ones, Cuphead. But, man, like, you know, I would be in a bad situation. I would be a bad situation to be in because, I mean, yeah, they kind of went there and clarified some things. They probably backtracked on a few things Unity did to try to keep their business, but for the most part, a lot of those developers, they felt betrayed because they were blindsided by that. They trusted that company, and now the trust is gone. So of course, if you got a company that you're working with, and they blindsided you with some fees that could really affect your income, you know, and you know, you really, the trust is gone, you know. So you really have to really think about, okay, do I want to do future business with these people? Because I can't trust them, and if you're working with a company that you can't trust, it's very stressful. I can just imagine that you're just worried that they're going to throw something at you that you didn't expect. So, anyways, so that's something that's going to, I'm sure, developing the story that's going to be developing over time to see how that really plays out with Unity. I'm just curious and really wanted to see how they react over the next few months, because they said all this is supposed to roll out January 1st, 2024. I'm just really curious about how many companies are going to stick with Unity and how many games are going to be switching engines. So we'll just see in the future. Maybe we'll touch back on this when we get some updated news. All right. But before we do that, we're going to hit our commercial break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Do you like horror films?
Do you listen to podcasts?
Well, if your answer was yes, and this is the podcast for you. Hi, I'm Johnny.
And I'm Randy.
And this is Small Town Horror with Johnny.
And Randy.
Join us as every other week we discuss and rate a new horror film.
Everything from the old black and whites to the 70s.
My personal favorite, the 80s slashers.
Don't forget about the 90s, the 2000s, and even horror films today.
So be sure to subscribe to Small Town Horror with Johnny and Randy.
And as always,
stay scared.
Stay spooky.
Welcome back. Hey, make sure that you check out the podcast Small Town Horror with Johnny and Randy. Great group of guys, great content, really good time when I'm over there with them during the podcast. And just if you love horror movies, you can't go wrong with the podcast. So just make sure that you check it out and give them a listen, okay? And leave them a review. We need that review. That review helps us out a lot. So let's get back into it. We're gonna go into our recent and upcoming titles this September. All right, so let's see here. Now, I'm not going to read every single title. I'm going to kind of go through the bigger titles. So if you want to see every single title, make sure you jump on GamesRadar.com and click on their release dates tab. So what we got here, we got Baldur's Gate that released September 6th. We got Starfield that released September 6th. Two really, 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 really big titles. And we're gonna get into some of their reviews and stuff later on. Then we had NBA 2K24 dropped September 8th. So that was also a really, really big title. And then we have, Mortal Kombat 1 coming out September 19th. So that's going to be a big anticipated release. A lot of big Mortal Kombat fans out there. I love Mortal Kombat. Been a fan of Mortal Kombat for years. Then we got Payday 3 coming out September 21st. Pretty big title there. Then we got the expansion, Phantom Liberty, for Cyberpunk 2077. And that's a big, big release date for that. A lot of big Cyberpunk fans. I love Cyberpunk. I still haven't beat the main story yet, but I've been playing it bits and pieces. So, anyways, that comes out September 26th. Then we got EA Sports FC 24. That comes out September 29th. Okay. And then we got, quite a few video games coming out in between then, like Truck Driver, Firefighting Simulator, Infinity Strash, Islanders VR Edition. We got a lot of games that are in there in September as well. Just ones that may be a little bit lower on the totem pole as far as popularity goes. So please, make sure you get on GamesRadar.com. Check out the release dates because there may be games in here that you want to play that I may not have mentioned, okay? So make sure you do that. And if there's games in here that you think are good that are worth to be on this list or worthy to be on this on my list, please let me know. I don't ever want to skip a title, but for the sake of time, I just kind of picked the bigger ones this time around. Well, if you heard that, you know it's time to get in the gourmet side of things. So today we're going to talk about barbecue pork chops, mashed potatoes, green beans, but not just any green beans, and Joni's world famous mac and cheese. So I got my wife here with me, Joni Byers. Say hello to everybody.
Hello.
So she's going to talk to us about this meal that she's prepped and some of the ingredients that you may use to make these things. So let's get into it.
So, like he said, we had barbecue pork chops. The way that I prepare barbecue pork chops when I'm going to make them in the oven is with really three ingredients. The pork chops, strawberries, dry rub seasoning. If you've never had strawberry seasoning, you should really give that a try. It's a restaurant here close to our hometown.
It is amazing.
And you can order their seasonings online. You can also buy them in the stores, a lot of places. It's so good that my brother, who doesn't live here anymore, actually buys it in bulk to take home with him in Georgia.
Also, we have a friend, Chris, that was on the show last week. We have a friend, a mutual friend that lives in New Jersey. Shout out to Darren Fisher, aka This Wolf. He has a band, by the way, called This Wolf. A really good band. But anyways, he tells Chris when he's out, so Chris can ship him some more. So, I mean, it's that good. If you tried it, it's amazing. But anyways, continue.
And then, lastly, just Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce. That's the barbecue sauce that we choose. But also, there's a new barbecue sauce that we started buying close to town called Ghetto sauce.
Yeah, ghetto sauce. Yeah, it's actually out of St. Louis. Freddie Lee's ghetto sauce.
Yeah, and so it's also really good if you have an opportunity to try that. So the way that I prepare that is in a 350 oven on a baking sheet. Just get the thick cut pork chops from the grocery store. Season those up really good with the strawberry seasoning. Cook them in the 350 oven for about 30 minutes. Take them out, put some of the liquid barbecue sauce on them, put them back in, and then my trick to make it like crispy and finish off that the barbecue sauce would be to let it cook for about 7 to 10 minutes and then turn the oven on the broil setting, and that'll give it that last heat hit of like super hot to kind of crisp it up there towards the end. So meat wise, that's what we had. And then
it was good.
We are not a instant mashed potato family, to the point that when Michael and Nicholas are here, they insist that we eat real potatoes, which is what we do anyway. So,
and just Michael and Nicholas, that's my two oldest twin boys. I have four kids. Well, we have four kids. We got Michael and Nicholas, and we got Brooks. And Brooks is 2 years old. And we have Hadley, which we just had Hadley back in June. So she is right at 3 months, getting right there at 3 months. It'll be the 20th of this month. It'll be 3 months.
So I prefer red potatoes, even though the yellow gold, the gold potatoes are also fantastic. But mostly we prefer red potatoes in our house. So I peel those and wash them good, boil them, season them with salt and pepper, butter, and I use the real salted butter for the potatoes. And then I use evaporated milk and just whip them up really good with a mixer or a hand potato smasher, either one. Bradley prefers them a little more creamy, whereas the boys prefer them a little more like lumpy. So depending on who I'm trying to make happy in that moment is how I make those potatoes.
Well, I didn't get a belly from being picky, but you know, I have my preferences and some stuff, but I like them either way, honestly. What we got left? Mac and cheese
and green beans.
Oh, let's talk about the green beans real quick. So, like I said, the green beans, they're not just any green beans. They are the brown sugar green beans. So, they're really easy to make, but they're really, really good. I'll let Joni explain how you make them.
So, you can use fresh or canned green beans, either one. We've done it both ways. I've also used frozen green beans to make them too. Bradley probably prefers when I do the cans. I prefer more when we do the fresh green beans. It's just a texture kind of difference, really. The canned green beans are a lot softer because they're the pre-cooked, mm-hmm. whereas the fresh green beans are usually a little bit more
firm.
So depending on how, I guess we'll do it with the cans this mm-hmm. time. So I just drain the cans of green beans and rinse them off pretty good. Put them in a bowl or a baking dish that can go in the oven. And you can do it a couple of different ways. But this time we had some bacon that we had cooked up for breakfast that was left over. And I put it in the refrigerator. And you just cut it up in like small pieces. Sprinkle it over the top of the green beans. Sprinkle the brown sugar over the top just as much as you think you would like.
Pretty much do it to taste.
Pretty much we, and then I put some salt on there, and then I put a couple of little pats of butter and then put it in the oven and let them cook in the oven for, you know, 10 minutes or so. Because the bacon is already cooked. So, like, you don't have to, like, cook the bacon
through. And I would say, too, like, if you're doing this like we were doing it with a meat, just stick that bacon dish or that the green beans in there in the oven with the meat while it's cooking. That way you're kind of knocking out, you know, two birds with one stone there.
And so that, it's a very good side. A lot of people really like it. Sometimes for holidays, I ended up having to make two different kinds of green beans, though, because mm-hmm. so our family doesn't like the sweet green beans, and they want the more savory type, and so sometimes we do both. And lastly, the mac and cheese. They say my famous mac and cheese is really not famous, I don't guess, but I do get a lot of requests for the mac and cheese. So, whereas we do make box mac and cheese quite a bit at home with a two-year-old, we never go wrong with mac and cheese. If he's not going to eat anything else, he'll eat that. Michael and Nicholas too, though. They're big mac and cheese fans. Yeah. But the mac and cheese that I make from scratch, just elbow noodles, and you cook the elbow noodles through, and then you put butter, Velveeta cheese, cheddar cheese, and cream cheese in there. Melt it all down, stir it up, and then I add some shredded cheese right at the end to give it some stringy, cheesy goodness.
Now you just told me you weren't going to give anybody the recipe.
I didn't tell you how much to put in there. All right. Also, when my brother-in-law hears this, he's never going to eat it again because he doesn't like cream cheese.
Oh, well, I mean, what he doesn't taste won't hurt him, you know? But, that's everything for that meal?
For that meal that we had, that's everything. Sometimes I throw in some Mrs. Schubert's rolls with that, or, you know, crescent rolls that we make in the oven. But we cook pretty much every night here. I mean, we eat out some, but not very much.
So if you have a recipe for us that you would like us to try out one of our family nights that we cook, please send it to us. We'd like to have it on the podcast. We may try it out and then maybe feature it on the podcast. So make sure that you leave a comment and let us know what recipes that you like. And that way we could try them and then hopefully put it on the podcast for you. And we'll give you a shout out. So make sure you do that. So that's it for today as far as the gourmet side goes. Thank you, Joni, for joining us. And letting us know how to cook that meal with the pork chops. And we're going to rewind and get back to it. All right, now it's time to get into our last topic of the day. And that is our hot or not games out now. So the first one I'm going to mention is Square Enix and their game Final Fantasy 16. Here on VGC, this is an article posted by Tom Ivan, and it says Square Enix has lost nearly $2 billion in market value since Final Fantasy XVI's release. Holy cow, that's a lot of money. That is a whole lot of money. It says employees and analysts express concerns about its development structure and quality control. Now, look, I've looked up reviews on this game, and it got excellent reviews. Matter of fact, it's here. It got a 9 out of 10 in IGN. It got an 88% on OpenCritic. And on PC Mag, it got a 4 out of 5. So, I mean, just great reviews and excellent, like, comments and things from consumers as well. So, I mean, just, it says, like right here, it says, audience reviews from AV, it says, Final Fantasy 16 is an awe-inspiring masterpiece that takes the long-standing franchise to new heights. As a lifelong fan of the series, I can confidently say that this game delivers on every front, providing a captivating narrative, breathtaking visuals, and engaging gameplay. So, I mean, just really good reviews, but for some reason, Square Enix is losing money, and it's not good. $2 billion, that's crazy in market value. So, it says Square Enix's stock has fallen 30% from its peak this year, whopping almost $2 billion off the company's market value. Oof. It says the Japanese publisher's share price reached its highest point this year in the days running up to Final Fantasy XVI's release in June, but it closed on Wednesday at its lowest level since May of 2022. It says the slump comes after the sale of the PS5 game reportedly failed to meet high end of the company's expectations. Well, I'm going to tell you one thing. I mean, I know that every console has its, you know, exclusives, and I guess Final Fantasy XVI is one of PS5's exclusives, But honestly, yeah, I mean, that's got to hurt too in some way, because when Final Fantasy came over to Xbox, I mean, people bought it. People got it. So now you're just limited to PS5. So really, you're limiting your market, because you're keeping people from other consoles to be able to purchase your game. So I don't know. I've always wondered about that, though. You know, is it worth it? Is it worth it to be an exclusive title? Because you really just limit your audience. So I don't know how that really works. As far as, like, I guess the companies, the consoles, like Microsoft or Sony, would have to pay out a lot of money to have those exclusive rights to their console. So I just don't know if it's worth it, or if they would make more money if it wasn't an exclusive title. But I don't know how you go about that. I'm not in that area of the business. So anyways, so definitely something interesting there. I hate that Square Enix is losing money like that, but, you know, they probably just said, hey, you know, this is what we expect, and they didn't reach that expectation. But you really can't do that, like I said, if you're limiting your audience. So our next on our list is none other than Cyberpunk 2077. Man, that's a great game. Now, Cyberpunk had a lot of stuff going around it when it first launched. Very rocky start for Cyberpunk. CD Projekt Red is the developer. Man, I love CD Projekt Red. I love The Witcher. We haven't talked about The Witcher on this podcast yet, but I will get into that at some point, believe me, because that is one of my favorite RPGs on the new console. So, I love where they've took that game, and I can't wait for the next Witcher, whenever that comes out, because I just know they're going to do great things with it. But I was super excited to hear about Cyberpunk 2077 when it was first, like, getting all the news out about it. But when it came out, it was definitely underwhelming, because when I kind of started playing that game, it really just, it was so many glitches. The gameplay was not very good. It was just a very disappointing release. And I really thought, honestly, I thought that CD Projekt Red was going to nail it. But it was very rocky. So I lost interest pretty early out the gate. I loved it. I loved the concept behind it, but I just lost interest. Well, then they started coming out with all these fixes and all these updates and patches and whatnot. And then this extra DLC. And it just did a world of difference. Just a world of difference. And it's a whole different game now. So now they're coming out with this expansion pack here. And it's called Phantom Liberty. And it's supposed to be like sort of like a spy type of story behind it. So I'm really looking forward to it. I still have to finish the main story, because I've took it really slow. I've did a lot of side quests on that game. And that's usually what I tend to do in RPGs. I usually don't try to go and gun the main storyline, just because I want to get as much out of it as I can. But definitely I need to get on the ball with that game, because I should have already, you know, cleared that main storyline, but I haven't. So on this article, this is by Michael Higham. This is on GameSpot.com. It's a featured article. It says, the infamous launch of Cyberpunk 2077 is 2020 is well-tread territory at this point, one that was met with numerous game-breaking bugs and performance issues across various platforms. Through several updates over the years, critical issues were addressed to get it in playable and stable state for those who faced the worst problems. But the 2.0 update, launching alongside the release of the Phantom Liberty expansion, is a more fundamental one, a rebuild of Cyberpunk 2077's very gameplay foundation. So he goes on to say, if you were in the camp that was underwhelmed by the RPG mechanics of the original version, where progression felt somewhat inconsequential in the terms of influence your playstyle and effectively building your character, this update is a strong, confident answer to that. It completely revamps the skill trees, improves the cyberware system, adds new elements to vehicular combat, changes police behavior, and on top of that, brings several quality of life improvements. After starting a new save and spending roughly 20 hours with Cyberpunk 2077's version 2.0, I'm happy to say that, from a gameplay perspective, it's now a stellar RPG. So great news there. Super excited. Now, that's not the full article. Just go to GameSpot.com to read that full one. But, I mean, there's all kinds of new updates coming, you know. Not only is it a new story, but there's a lot of new updates to the gameplay. You can, I guess, shoot out of your car now. You can, what else did I say you could do there? The police act differently. So there's a lot of things going on. Yeah, the skill trees have been improved. The cyberware system. And some other quality of life improvements as well. So that's going to be good. That's going to be good to hear. Oh, that's good to hear. I'm sorry. So really good to hear about that. So definitely looking forward to Phantom Liberty and really just looking forward to getting back into the Cyberpunk universe. Let's see here. Now we're going to talk about Baldur's Gate. Now Baldur's Gate was released here, I think it was on the 6th of September. And it has gotten, like, just the best reviews possible. IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. PC Gamer gave it a 97%. I mean, just overwhelmingly positive. Some of this, the comments say, I'm in love again. So a lot of people are loving this RPG. I played the old Baldur's Gate. Now, what I'm thinking about is, when I'm looking into this, I think it's turn-based. And honestly, I'm more of a real-time fighting type of person. I'm not a real big fan of turn-based. Now, Final Fantasy VII was the one exception to me that I love that turn-based combat. And there's other Final Fantasies as well. But I don't know, I guess since Final Fantasy was really what I played with, considering turn-based combat, you know, that's the game that I played. All the other games, I'm just used to real-time, you know, fighting. So, Baldur's Gate looks really tempting to play, and I want to play it. But right now, I don't have a PS5, for one. And, for two, I'm not really big into turn-based fighting games. Not to say I won't play them. Like I said, Final Fantasy is one of my exceptions on that rule. But, definitely would like to try. I've watched some videos over it. It looks really good. The story looks amazing. But I just don't know if it's something that I would like personally because of the turn-based strategy. Because to me, it just feels like it's a little slow on some things. But here's the thing. That's just my opinion. And I know that there's people out there, probably people listening to this, would definitely say otherwise. And that's fine. That's just my personal preference. But that doesn't mean I won't try. And that doesn't mean I wouldn't like it. I haven't played the game. I'm sure I would love the story. I just may not like the combat. And I heard, now I don't know how true this is, and if you know this or not, please leave a comment and let me know. But I heard it could be switched on and off. I heard that you can make it real-time fighting. I don't know how true that is, or if that's just a feature that they're thinking about adding. But that would be awesome. That way, people that like both types of fighting could do it both ways. Or you could have it one way or the other. That way it pleases a bigger audience. So, I mean, if that's a feature that they're thinking about adding or they have, that's great. So, let's go on to the next game. And that is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, this game, if you listen to our podcast and this is your first time listening, please check out our first episode, which is Friday the 13th. And we did our review over Friday the 13th. And this game is by the same people. And it is over Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it has semi-decent reviews. Not great by any means. But just not, they're not on the bottom either. But so IGN gave it a 6 out of 10. GameRant gave it a 7 out of 10, and OpenCritic gave it a 76%. Some of the reviews, I got 4 and 5 star reviews. Some people don't think it's good at all. So I'll kind of give you the best of both worlds there. So one person says, this is Lum Skip. This is 3 weeks ago. It says, very fun, challenging, and unique take on multiplayer asymmetrical horror games. First of all, the graphics are stunning. The gameplay feels far more unique than Gun Media's previous title, Friday the 13th, the game, which I also loved at the time. This game has a lot of clear love put into it. So I agree with that. I mean, the game looks great. I've played it. I had a good time with it. I'm not going to lie. I had a good time with it. Now, a lot of times I was playing the family, which is the people that are going after everybody. I was playing the family. I haven't played as the victim yet. But I heard it's pretty clear which side's, you know, the best side to play for. I don't know, so I can't really make that judgment at this point. But the game looks great, and the mechanics are pretty good, too. It takes a little getting used to, especially, like, if you're playing as the family, you start off at the bottom. Well, if you're the chainsaw guy, you start off in the bottom. So kind of navigating that and figuring out where to go, that gets kind of confusing. But I guess that's just part of playing the game. You got to play it to understand it. And if you don't play it, you're not going to know what's going on anyway. So you got to play it. So that's one of the reviews. Let's look at the bad review I see here. This is 2 stars. This is from Jay Birch. It says, speaking as someone who plays on the Xbox One, it's only a 2 to 3 star game. And here's why. He goes on to say, he said, due to a lack of knowledge, poor tutorial system, one-sided difficulty, lack of content, in-game and matchmaking bugs, time it takes to find a match, and a higher price tag than expected, I give this game 2 stars. He said, the sound design and graphically, it's impressive. He said, it struggles to get over the hump for me. Full review below. Now, he's got a huge review there. I'm not going to get into all that. But I'll just say a little bit of it. It says, the game is extremely unforgiving to new players due to its poor tutorial system and confusing maps. I mean, it is kind of confusing. The tutorial system isn't just horrible. It does explain things to you, but you have to kind of go into it yourself. Now, it doesn't, like, make you do it. Now, you have to kind of go in there and learn everything yourself, and it's got different tabs you can click on that's going to help you learn the mechanics a little bit better, but it's not just laid out there. So I understand the frustration there, but also, you know, just get on YouTube. Look on YouTube, you know. That's kind of what I did. If there's something I needed to explain more, I just got on YouTube. But I understand, well, you know, the game should give you all those mechanics and directions on how to do everything. But I didn't think it was horrible. I thought it was decent. It says the matchmaking takes atrociously long. It takes forever. I'm not going to lie. Now, that is true. You will sit there and wait 5 to 10 minutes for a match sometimes. And 5 minutes just about all the time. Almost every time you wait about 5 minutes. So, yeah, it takes forever to get a match. And that's one thing that is frustrating. And, it just takes too long. You know, you're sitting there waiting. Especially if you're playing at night. You'll sit there and wait and fall asleep before the match even starts. So, yeah, it can be very frustrating when it comes to wait times to start a match. But overall, I didn't think it's a horrible game. I think it's a fun game you probably play with friends. Like, that's what I enjoyed about Friday the 13th. It's just playing with friends. That was the biggest thing about that game. Just having fun, hanging out with friends, and just having a good time. So if you have friends to play with, Texas Chainsaw Massacre would probably be a great game to play. If you like a horror-type game. Now, if you don't like horror games, you don't have to be scared, then don't play it because it's not for you. That's definitely for the people that like horror games, that are fans of the film. But if you don't like that concept, don't play it because you're going to be wasting your time. So let's get into the next game, which is Diablo 4. Okay, I love some Diablo. Been a big fan of Diablo since the first one. Diablo 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, 4, I will admit, I haven't played 4 as much as I thought I would. Now, my nephew, we do game share. And he bought it, and he was wanting me to play it all the time. And he still wants me to play it sometimes, and I just hadn't got into it as much. It's a great game. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I mean, it's just a great game. But I don't know. It just didn't hold my attention as much as I thought it would. And it's probably just because I haven't sat down and played a lot. I got, like I said, I got a little baby now. She's 3 months. Got a 2-year-old. And I got my 2 twin boys. It's just kind of hard to have time to do everything I want to do. So, and there's new games coming out. I'm constantly want to play. And so I'm getting little bits and pieces of each game. I really need to sit down and finish one. But anyway, so Diablo 4, it looks excellent. I love the creative system on it. The graphics are just top-notch. They did a really, really good job with that. So the reviews for Diablo 4, 9 out of 10. It got an 85% from PC Gamer, and it got a 4 out of 5 from Eurogamer. So definitely the reviews show it. It's a great game. Some of the comments were, this is the best Diablo. Not only that, but it may be the best top-down ARPG ever. Now, I agree. It's really, really good. The top-down RPG. And if you've never played Diablo, which I'm sure if you've never played it, you've probably heard of it at least. It's just kind of top-down. It's kind of like, I don't know, like if you're somebody who's going up a ladder, kind of like top-down, but a little bit sideways. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But kind of slanted going up, and because you can kind of see the side of your player, but you can't see like all of your player like behind them. So it's top down, but it's pretty close to the character. So I mean, I don't feel like it's that big of a deal. But I got some friends, some buddies of mine. Shout out to Woody. he's not on the show yet, but I definitely want to get Woody in here to help me with the podcast one day. But anyways, he does not like top down RPGs. He told me straight up he don't even want to play it because he don't like it. So he don't want to even give it a chance because he don't like top down, which is fine. You know, everybody has their preferences, and I don't mind it. It's definitely not my favorite, you know, perspective on a video game, but I love Diablo. I love the game. So I mean, it doesn't really bother me that much. So it got really good reviews. The next game that we're gonna check out. Now this game has been heavily marketed, and that is NBA 2K24. Now, if anybody knows me, they know I love NBA 2K games. I'm a big fan of NBA 2K. Honestly, I'm just a big fan of basketball. I love basketball. I love basketball games. I've been playing them since, heck, NBA Live 95, you know, on the Super Nintendo. I've literally bought basketball games every year, and I enjoy them. I love playing them. I love playing them by myself. I love playing them with friends. And 2K have really, you know, they've really reinvented the series. And they started doing the My Career and the online play. And they just kind of revolutionized what it is to be a basketball game. With that being said, they have done it a really good job on it. But then they've also, I feel like they've kind of taken advantage of the consumer at the same time here recently. So we're going to kind of get into that, and I think that's what a lot of people are kind of upset about with 2K. So it has got really mixed reviews. I think I looked on Microsoft, and it had like a 2 stars, 2 out of 5 stars. And I think IGN gave it pretty low score. Let me see here. I'm trying to pull up my tab here. And I think it went away. Let's pull it up right here. So, let's see here. Yeah, they gave it a 6 out of 10. Yeah, 6 out of 10. And so, I mean, it didn't get great reviews. And that was probably generous to them because, you know, a lot of people did not even give it that much. So, 6 out of 10. The biggest problems with this, what I heard from just about everybody that left a review, was that the game has heavily monetized every bit of it. So, like, they have literally took every part of the game, just about, and put a price tag on it. So, the biggest problem with this is, like, when they started doing this with buying VC, I understand they got a virtual currency you can buy to help upgrade your player. Which, okay, fine. You know, you want to add that feature? Fine. Whatever. But then over the years, after that was added, the prices went up. And then it costs more VC to upgrade your player to 85. Because that's, you start out with like a 60 something, maybe a 60 overall, I can't really remember. And then you can upgrade your player up to an 85, and from there, you have to pretty much play the game to get them up to a 99. But every year, the prices go up, and it takes more VC to increase your players, you know, increase your player to the cap of 85. And every year, it just seems like it's just more and more and more. And, like, you can buy the bundle. You can buy, like, a $100 bundle and get, like, 100,000 VC. You can buy the, I think it's, like, the legendary bundles, like, $150, and you still get that much VC. But I'll just tell you what. If you spend $100 on a video game, you should be able to get one character to the cap. I just really believe that if you spend an extra money, you should be able to get your player to the cap of an 85. But there's so much that you have to, so much stuff to buy. And it makes it tempting because, like, 2K has clothing, they have shoes, they have jewelry, they have all this stuff to customize your character, and it costs VC to do that. Now, you can earn VC in-game. They're, by no means are they like, hey, you have to pay this money. No. But at the same time, it is so tempting that it's almost, you know, it's almost unforgiving to the point where you, like, you can't help but spend money on that game. Because you don't want to be walking around with, like, a brown shirt on. You don't want to, because, I mean, a lot of people say, well, you look like a bum on the video game. But you don't really want to be doing that. You want to have your player decked out and, you know, at least looking halfway decent. And because, honestly, if you step on the court with a brown shirt on and gray jogging pants, which this is what you start out as, most people would jump off the spot, especially after the game done took off. You know, after 2 or 3 weeks, people are jumping off the spot if you're a brown shirt. You know, you step on the court with them, nope, off the court. And you can't play. It's hard to get in a position where you can play the game and have fun because people don't want to play with you because you're not decked out or you don't look like you've invested some money into your player, which is sad. So that's another problem, you know. So they've monetized everything, so it makes it to where you want to spend money. And now this year, which is the biggest problem, is they monetized, I think, my team where you can buy your levels. They monetized the park, which, you know, you have like season levels that you get, like a game pass type thing. Now you can buy each level for that to get where you want to be. Now that's a feature that's on Fortnite as well, maybe some other games as well. But still, you know, that's just more things that you can buy and to buy out your player. And I understand, like, you know, this is from their point of view, it's like a marketing thing, and the more money the player spends, the more money for them. But it just gets kind of frustrating because it just looks more like a cash grab game. And it's a lot of people saying it's the same type of game as it was the year before. I didn't really like the parks this year. I looked at them. I don't really like that futuristic stuff. I loved it back in the day, like 2K17, 16, where it was just like Sunset and all them. And I don't know, it seemed like it was a simpler game back then, and it was more fun. Now it's so complex, and with all these character, the caps, and the badges that you can only use, and that's another thing, too, before I get any further than that, while I'm thinking about it, the badges. So you upgrade your player, right, and you work hard to get his badges up. Well, now they degress. So now if you don't use your player in that play style, then your badges are going to go down, which sucks because you're paying all this money for your character anyways, and then you make a system where I'm going to lose stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's counterproductive. I feel like 2K should really nerf that feature, like, right out the gate, because I feel like that's going to really drive people away from this game. This is the first year, honestly, and this is the truth. This is the first year that I have not pre-ordered 2K at all. I've bought a 2K game probably ever since 2K5 or 2K3. And this is the first year I did not do it. And I don't know if I plan to get it or not. It really just depends. I'm having fun with 2K23, honestly, still. And I'm not I hadn't even got very far into that because I hadn't really had a whole lot of time to play it. But I don't know. I just feel like with 2K, the whole monetizing thing is just kind of getting out of control. I wish they kind of go back, take a few steps back, and just look at the customer base and say, okay, what do I need to do to help my customer base? Like, they're loyal. Like, what do I got to do to keep them and make them happy and make them feel like we care about them? So I think that's a look and a perspective that 2K needs to really look at and understand, like, hey, you know, look, we do have a big loyal customer base. What can we do this year that's going to make them happy and just show them that we care about them and care about, you know, the money that they spend on this game? Because, you know, that's it. You know, we're the customers and we're making them money. Help us out a little bit. Because here's the thing. If you do us right, you're going to make money regardless. And you make a little bit more with sugar than you do salt. So give us some sugar. You know, give us some sugar, 2K. But anyway, so that's it for the 2K. Check it out. You know, like I said, all these games I'm talking about, guys, this is my opinion on them. Please do not take it to heart. Make your own choices. Make your own opinions. Check these games out for yourself. And you make your own review. You make your own opinion. And let me know about it. All right. So the last game that we're going to talk about here is one of my favorite games out now. And I've been playing it and playing it and playing it. And I'm going to eventually do a podcast about this game. But not right now. I'm just going to kind of talk about it a little bit, and that is Starfield. Man, oh man, have I been enjoying this game. So Starfield has a lot of good feedback, but also a lot of bad feedback. So there's a lot of mixed reviews on Starfield. So trying to navigate that is interesting. So and it's hard because I love the game. I love it, and I'm having a good time with it. And it's kind of hard to see some of the reviews that it's getting because I'm like, man, I love the game. So the reviews this get, some of the reviews is a 7 out of 10 from IGN, a 3 out of 5 from Eurogamer, and a 75% from PC Gamer. Now look, to me, those reviews do not do that game justice. Now that's just me. But, you know, like a lot of these companies, they come in and they are these gaming companies and they come in and they have specific expectations for this game. Now, look, are their expectations, like, I don't know, too much? Here's the thing. A lot of their expectations are based off pretty much what was promised. And so I can't blame them for being upset or expecting more than what they got. So I'm not going to sit here and act like, well, they're just giving these scores, they're terrible scores, and they're giving them to them for no reason. No, there's a reason behind it. But I'm loving the game. And I guess I can kind of overlook some of these things and just enjoy it for what it is. And some of the other people are having a hard time doing that because they feel like, okay, well, this is what it was supposed to be. And this is what it is. My thing is, too, I love that, too, because the only thing that's going to do is push the developers to make that game into what these people want it to be. And what they want it to be is not a bad thing. Because I see a lot of the problems as well. It just doesn't really deter me from enjoying the game. Because I just kind of like, okay, this is a problem. This is something that I wish was better. But, you know, I still like the game. So, here's a few reviews on it. Like, the reviews I see from the people are positive. Like, 5 stars. Now, I see the actual, like, IGN's ratings and stuff. But the people, you know, the people that are playing the game, a lot of these are positive. Now, there's a few negative, but most of these are 5 stars from what I'm looking at. So, I got one person named Jordan here. And it says, so I'm about 50-plus hours into it now, and I can say with confidence that it is a fantastic game. If you've played a Bethesda game before, then you know what to expect. Interactive environments, lived-in, populated cities, settlements, tons of quests and side activities, and more. Skill tree, etc. Break it all down. I'm not going to go into his skill tree breakdown, but he goes on to say Starfield is a masterpiece. So a really good review there. I'm going to try to find one that's not so good. Okay, here's one by Wolf Ferguson. And it says, I want to like this game. It's pretty. and the character creation is fun, but there are some issues that are making it a chore to play. It says, worst space travel ever. You open a menu, open a star map, select a fast travel spot, and you hit a loading screen, and then you arrive wherever you're going. Now, you can do that. Now, that is something that kind of does take away from the game itself, because you can fast travel and kind of avoid traveling through space in your spaceship. So, which that makes it kind of unimmersive if you do that. But here's the thing, that's your choice. You know, you don't have to do that. So, I mean, fast travel if you want. If you don't want to fast travel and you want to be more immersed in the experience, then don't fast travel. Just hop in your spaceship, go to space, hopper drive or grav drive to the next place, and there you are. You're there. And that way you're kind of interacting with the environment more than just fast traveling. Now, I have really taken advantage of fast traveling because I'm trying to get through some stuff. And if I don't have time, I'm just trying to fast travel and get there and go. But I do want to enjoy space. I'm kind of getting leveling up my skill tree and stuff. So I'm trying to enjoy the game. I'm doing some side quests right now. I'm just starting to really get back into the main quest because I've been doing a side quest from one of the factions. And just finished that. Anyways, it's a really cool game. And you get a lot of good rewards. Like, the rewards on this game are insane. Like, some of the rewards are just great. But a lot of people are kind of giving a lot of trouble because of the limited exploration that it has. So, not to really ruin this game for you, but you land on a planet and you can look around, but there's a certain point. If you go and go on this planet where you land at, you'll hit like some kind of invisible wall. Now, I've never done this because here's the thing. I've never really wanted to try to find the wall. I didn't want to find the invisible wall, so I haven't really explored, you know, to go find this invisible wall that's going to block me from going any further. But you know, here's the thing. I've explored, and I've never hit it, and I've had fun, you know, I've had a fun time exploring. But if you hit it, you just hop back in your spaceship, land at another spot in the world, and you go explore that spot. So it's not limited per se, it's more like limited in an area, per area. So they say, oh, it's limited, you know, it's limited. It is, but it isn't. So, I mean, you can explore the world. Now, the world's automatically generated for most of the worlds. But you can still go out there and explore pretty much unlimited in a sense. So it is different than what we thought it was going to be. Now, Bethesda made it out to be like this is the best exploration game ever. And I guess as far as how many places you can go, probably. But as far as like the seamlessness, it's not very seamless. There's a lot of loading screens. A lot of, you know, like I said, if you go explore an area, eventually you're going to hit a spot, you know, to where you need to go load back in to another part of that area. So it's not very seamless, unfortunately. I wish it was like No Man's Sky seamless, but I guess since the graphics are better than No Man's Sky, then, you know, they I guess this wasn't possible, or they just don't know how they did it. But definitely wish it was like that. Honestly, I wish that they kind of made more cutscenes with the traveling into the worlds and out of the worlds. That way, it at least seemed more immersive going into and out of the worlds. So, but like I said, I'm not going to do a whole review over Starfield now. I just want to kind of get into it. I'm really enjoying the game. And I'm looking forward to actually talking more in depth about it. My nephew, Jeremy, he plays with me. And, well, he don't play with me, but we're usually on a party chat when we play, you know, play at the same time. And we're just talking to each other about our experiences and things, you know, like that. So we have a good time with it. And I'm going to get with him. And hopefully he can join us at the podcast that day and maybe a few other buddies. And we'll talk about Starfield. Well, that ends our Hot or Not video games out now. Make sure that you leave us a comment and you tell us what games you think are hot and what games that you think are not. So get on there, interact with us, and let us know. All right, so it's game over for this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed yourself. I hope that you learned something new. And I hope that inspires you to get out there and try some of these video games for yourself. Form your own opinions. Form your own reviews. Don't just take my word for it or anybody else's word for it. Get out there and try these games. I encourage you guys to join us on our social media platforms. We're on Facebook at Be More Rad's Gaming Gourmet Podcast. We're on YouTube at Be More Rad's Gaming Gourmet. Instagram at Be More Rad's _gaming_gourmet. And then at Twitter with the X, Be More Rad's Gaming. Now, we have a link tree, and it's attached to the Spotify podcast. And so just make sure you click on that that link tree, and it'll take you to the other platforms for Be More Rad's Gaming Gourmet. So that just makes it a little bit easier to transition to different platforms for you guys. So also make sure that you are leaving us a review and a comment. We got questions on this podcast specifically. Make sure that you get on there and you answer those questions and interact with us a little bit. Leave us a review. And if you do that, if you leave us a review and you do answer some questions, we're going to enter you to win the Friday the 13th bundle from last episode. I didn't have a lot of people do that, follow the instructions last episode, and that's the first one, so I kind of expected that. So make sure you guys take advantage of what everybody else didn't take advantage of last episode and win this Friday the 13th bundle. Leave us a comment, leave us a review, and win that bundle. All right. So that's it for today. I really look forward to the next episode. Thank you for listening. And until next time, keep gaming and stay rad.